Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, listeners learn about people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Attendance in America's churches is dwindling rapidly, yet the need to spread the gospel continues to be paramount. How can we as Christians move from behind the four walls of our church buildings to interact in our communities and meet the spiritual needs of our neighbors without coming across as forceful and preachy? Should outreach efforts target only those with physical needs, or should they seek to build relationships with all members of the community? My guest today, Tony Campbell, has worn a variety of work hats over the years in human resources, radio, and education, but her passion is reaching the community for Christ through practical acts of service. At her former church, Tony founded the outreach ministry Community Connections and is now employed on staff at Princeton Alliance Church as the Benevolence Ministry Manager. Tony spends her days running PAX Food Pantry, Car Ministry, Life Skills Workshops, various large-scale events, and handling daily financial assistance requests from the community. Several years ago, Tony was honored with the Mercer County Woman of Achievement Award for her outreach work. In the evening, Tony enjoys to write. Her devotionals have appeared in The Quiet Hour and on ChristianDevotions.us. She also maintains a blog entitled Lakeside Lessons. She is currently working on her first book, A Step-by-Step Guide to Community Outreach. Good morning and welcome to the show, Tony.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here, Tony.
I'm excited to be here.
Well, as you know, and as the listeners know, I've had quite a bit of problems with this show. I won't get into details, but there's just been a lot of technological stuff going on, and Tony and I have tried to record a couple of times, and either due to internet problems or just some crazy thing, things just didn't work out. So I'm so excited that you're here, and we're both really praying hard that things go well today. Tony, I wanted to ask you about Princeton Alliance Church. Where is it located?
It's located in Plainsboro, New Jersey, which is right outside of Princeton. It's about midway through New Jersey, not far, for about 10 minutes from the University of Princeton.
Okay. And see, me having met you in Pennsylvania, somehow I was thinking it was located somewhere in Pennsylvania. I never gave Princeton, New Jersey a thought. So I wanted to clarify that for myself and for our listeners. Well, Tony, you've had quite a bit of experience with community outreach, with writing, with all these different things. Would you share with us what kind of childhood experiences led you to the kind of work that you do today? Were you the type of person that enjoyed doing things for others when you were a kid, or did this kind of develop later on in your life?
I would say it actually developed later on in life. As a child, I was always kind of championing the underdog, always tried to befriend those who were kind of on the periphery, because I just had a heart for people to feel included, but not really from a service standpoint. I confess that my 20s and 30s, I was building, busy raising a family and working a job and kind of really inwardly focused. It was in my 40s that service really became a driving force in my life, and I understood its importance. But as far as the writing aspect is concerned, yes. Ever since I was a young teenager, 12, 13, and my aunt gave me my first writing journal, I have had a love of writing, and I appreciated her seeing that in me and trying to develop it, because about 3 years ago, I found my first journal that she had given me, and she said, I believe that you have a gift, and I know someday you're going to use that to glorify God. So that was a real inspiration to have her know that so early on.
Wow, I guess so. Excuse me. My throat is very dry today. Tony, The main point of your work is to take the church out of the building into the community. Can you walk us through some of the steps that you took to carry out that concept through the development of outreach ministries?
Absolutely. You know, it really began with a book called The Externally Focused Church by Rick Rousseau and Eric Swanson. I was given that at a leadership conference, and I confess it took me about a year before I opened the covers. And then when I started, when I started to read it, there were two things in there that really jumped off the page at me. And one was that critical mass is one person with a vision. And really, it wasn't until a few years after I started this that I looked back and realized that God had planted a vision in me as I saw things unfolding. But that was an interesting thought to me when I first read it. And the other thing was a quote that basically said, if your church closed its doors today, would anybody in the community weep? Would they see it as a loss? Would they realize that, you know, this was a resource that was no longer available to them? And that just broke my heart. And I went to my pastor and I said, you know, we're a loving, giving church. We open our pocketbooks. We care for each other. But I don't think that we've made any kind of real connection out in the immediate community. And thankfully, he agreed, because that could have gone poorly. Like, trying to tell me how to run my church. But he did agree. And so his thought was, let's do something to get everybody on board, something that's like kind of an easy win, all ages, all abilities, and really help them get plugged into the idea of service. And so we held a food drive for a local food bank, and we raised over 900 pounds of stuff, everything from food to toiletry items, and it was great. I mean, everybody felt really good about that, but I went back to him and I said, and we stretched ourselves absolutely zero. You know, we never left the building. We really need to go out into the community. And so he pointed me in the direction of a number of like-minded people in the congregation. Some were working with nonprofits. Some had a heart for community. And we really, there was no playbook. You know, we didn't know where to start. So we said, well, let's just sit down and write every single nonprofit name down that we can think of in the immediate area. And we began to call them and simply say, if you had a handful of volunteers to help you, what would your needs be? What would that look like? And the very first place that responded to that call was Dress for Success. Are you familiar with that organization, Patty?
I am not. No, Tony, I'm not.
Okay. Well, it's a national organization, and it exists to help women get back into the workplace who have been out for a long time or get into the workplace if they've never worked. But here they need a job, so they don't really have the money to buy the interview suit. And so a woman will go in and get suited, they call it. They'll get outfitted with an appropriate interview suit. And if they get the job, then they will give them a week's worth of business attire. And that's everything from, you know, jewelry and pumps to, a pocketbook and scarves and the outfit.
Wow.
And, it's really very cool. And the ladies who help in the boutique, they will explain how to mix and match, how to look for a proper fit. So it really is more than just handing over some clothes. And that particular location that it called us had a real need for storage and just an upgrade. They were in the basement of a building, and it was just kind of
drab
looking. Yeah, very drab.
If I might ask real quick, Tony, where does Dress for Success get this clothing from? Is it donated?
There's a lot of major corporations. Johnson & Johnson is, in our area anyway, one of the chief organizations that work with them, and they do clothing drives amongst their population.
Okay.
And then send it over to Dress for Success.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I wondered as you were talking. I wondered, wow. I thought, wow, that's pretty neat.
Right. Right. So they, you know, they want to take in season, in good condition, in fashion clothing.
Sure.
And so it was really kind of cool because the woman who called us was a Christian and she worked for a Jewish woman. And she was like, you are an answer to prayer because we have had this need for a while. And I keep saying to my boss, we need to put it out there. I'm telling you, God will hear it. And, you know, if we just tell somebody that we have this need. And so just our answering, just our making the phone call was a bolster to her testimony to her boss that, you know, her faith was real and that God did hear that need. And so we kind of tapped our sphere of influence. We asked for volunteers from the church to help paint. And we got somebody who did upholstery and carpet cleaning to come and donate his services. And it took us maybe two weekends to really give the place the sprucing up. There was a young woman who was an artist, and she did beautiful handwritten. She did a lot of calligraphy. She did some, she did some encouraging signs, you know, inspirational quotes. And then she did like a big writing of accessories and painted some necklaces and earrings and stuff on the wall where the accessories hung and just really beautified the place. And so they help about 60 women or more a year. And it was just a really, you know, inspirational thing for them to be able to say, hey, there's somebody out there who knows what we're doing and cares enough to help us to do it better.
Now, that's pretty neat. How do these folks connect, Tony? Like if somebody has a job interview, how do they know to go to this Dress for Success?
They have to be referred.
Can anybody just walk in? Or?
No, they do have to be referred by a church or a social services organization.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right. So you have to make an appointment for the fittings. And then in the evenings, they also have, they have a career center there set up with computers so that people will have, if they don't have a computer in their home, they have kind of a home base from which to send out resumes, to receive emails, to make some phone calls. They also have empowerment meetings where they teach kind of a life skills thing, and they have networking. They have organizations, companies maybe like a J&J that have need for people to fill secretarial spots or, you know, accounting positions, whatever. And so there, that it also serves as a network where they can kind of connect directly to somebody who has a job need. So they're doing a great work.
Yes, it sounds absolutely fantastic.
Right. So that was one of the steps we took. Your question, I think, was, you know, how we carried out the concept of getting out of the building. So the first step was making those phone calls. And then as people started to learn about us, they started to refer people to us. There was a woman who was in our congregation, and she had been living in a homeless shelter, and we had been picking her up with our van to bring her to church, and she wound up in her own housing, and then things turned bad again. She wound up in a different shelter, and so she kind of tapped us and said, hey, can you come and paint the shelter? And school started to hear about us. You know, it just, word got out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we, you know, started to choose the different organizations that we would come alongside.
Well, it sounds really fascinating, Tony. I know you have a story to tell about what happened at that shelter.
Yes. That was really the outreach event that turned the light on, if you will, for the congregation. You know, up to then we had been saying, well, we need help, we need help, we need help. And the shelter was a 17-bedroom family shelter. It was the only place in the city where families could stay together. It wasn't just a woman's shelter or a woman and children's shelter. And So as I mentioned, that congregant said we need a coat of paint, and two or three of us went through and we said, oh my goodness, there's so much need here. I mean, a coat of paint isn't even going to begin to cover it. And so I was making plans about how we could kind of go in and at least take care of that initially. And I talked to a friend who does house staging, and she said, you know, why don't we do kind of like a mini Extreme Home Makeover? That show was very popular at the time. And
oh, yes.
Right? And she said, we could get small groups to each go in and adopt a bedroom, and they could make it over kind of dorm room style, because that's about as big as they were. And I loved the idea. I thought it was great. And so as the small groups, it cost them each about $300 to do a room. So if there were 10 or 12 people in a small group, it really turned out to be a very small amount that they were each responsible for, $30, $40, very doable.
So each person had to put this money into the project?
Each member of the small group, yes.
Yeah.
Because what they did was they purchased new bed linens, new curtains, because a lot of people just had bed sheets tacked over the window. It was a cold floor, so we get a throw rug. They lived out of bins for food and clothing, so we put a little racking system up so they could, you know, it could be human and hang their clothes. You know, that just such dignity is stripped in so many ways when you're in a place like that.
The things that we in our everyday lives so take for granted. Like a closet to put clothes in and a kitchen cabinet to put food items in.
Correct. And, you know, these places, they run the risk of bed bug infestation, so you weren't allowed to have anything wooden in the room. So we bought bed risers and under the bed plastic storage, and we got them plastic chest of drawers, kind of a Rubbermaid type of system. A night light, because there was only one light in the ceiling. And so at night, if mom was in there with the kids and she wanted to do anything after they fell asleep, you know, she'd have to shut off the light and then she'd be in darkness. So just having a little desk lamp where maybe she could read or do whatever she needed to do while the kids were sleeping, just simple, simple things. Mm-hmm. And so Home Depot actually offered to help us with the paint. They provided the paint for the walls and the ceiling. Some of it was free. Some of it was at a discount. They work with us. And then the groups, as I said, came up with a few hundred dollars amongst themselves to purchase. And we just let them go. The walls all had to be the same color because it was a state-run facility, and they were very particular about that. But we could go to town on the color scheme for the drapes and the linens and all of that. So one room was in maroon. Another room was in shades of greens. Another one was teal and brown. Another one was yellow. And, you know, so it was God found the exact right color paint, because it was amazing. No matter what color we put in there, those walls just looked great with that. It was kind of a pale yellow that was almost nondescript, but it just really highlighted everything else in the room. And so as people met the people that were living in those rooms, they'd come back at the end of the night, we'd have the big reveal, you know, we'd give the kids a little something like a pillow pad or some books or whatever that they could hold on to and keep. It was no longer a project. It was no longer something that we just contributed money to. These were people. This was Danny and April and, you know, Keisha and just people, you know, who had a story, and we learned about them. And so the volunteers would begin to come to me and say, well, we're going to go back and do something for Thanksgiving, right? And what are we doing for Christmas? And so that one shelter really became the impetus for several different types of outreaches. And really, like I said, it just flipped the switch. The pastor said to me, I've never seen a boat turn this fast, where people just jumped on board and service became part of our DNA. And people were coming to the church because they were seeing online on our website the things that we were doing. They were like, this is, you know, this speaks to me. I want to be involved in my community. I want to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tony, I know you had a story to tell because we started to record the show earlier, and I have some notes here, but you had a story to tell about when you were trying to raise some money and some pretty amazing things that happened there.
Yes. That was actually for that first outreach for Dress for Success. We really had no budget. We didn't even have a ministry name prior to Dress for Success. So we set up a table in our fellowship mall, and we tried to explain to people, hey, you remember the food drive? Well, that was us, and now we have a name. We're Community Connections, and this is what we're doing. And, you know, it was a lot of talking. And this is what we need. We put together a budget, and it was about $2,200. And so after that first day, we received about $200 in checks. And I was shocked because, again, this was the church that opened their pocketbooks, this very generous church, and wasn't a very large church, about 400 or 500 people, so middle of the road. And I said to the pastor, you know, can we set up again next week? Because he didn't get nearly enough. And so he said, okay, not a problem. And that week happened to be a weekend where there was a pastor who was retiring, and that reception line kind of somehow got set up in front of our table and nobody saw us. And I think maybe we got another $50. But a woman came to me that second week and said, you know, I went to my employer and I asked them if perhaps we could donate some supplies. She worked in the maintenance department. She said, I thought maybe we could donate the paint. And they said, no, but I'll give you the supplier's name for where we get the paint, and maybe they would be willing to help out. So she said, I don't have an answer for you yet, but I'll get back to you. And I was just so impressed with that. And I thought, you know, she's not even invested as much in this as I am, and this is my concept and going forward. And I thought, what's to stop me from writing to my employer? I had literally just had a conversation about the week before with the corporate attorney who said to me, you know, he's very philanthropic. And I was like, okay, let's put that to the test. So I sent this man, and I wasn't convinced he knew who I was, because he owned the radio station that I was working at.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, right. So, I mean, I knew him, but he didn't.
Right.
I didn't think he knew me. And I sent him this email late at night and said, you know, here's what we're trying to accomplish. And it's kind of a little bit of a different ask, because I'm asking you, we're helping this 501c3 organization, but I'm going to ask you to donate the money to my church, because we need to funnel it to purchase the supplies to help that organization. And I attached the budget, and I explained the situation about only raising 250 of the 2250 that we needed, and I sent it off and just said a prayer. And 15 minutes later, answer pops back up. Really shocked me, because again, it was late at night.
Because it was late at night, yeah.
Yeah, it was like 10-11 o'clock at night. And he responded, and he said, I love it. You know, first impressions, all of that. I love what the organization is doing. I love what you're trying to do. So does $2,000 sound like what you need? Will that work? And I almost fell off my chair. Like, yeah, I think that'll be just fine. Thank you. And so a few days later, the woman comes back to me and says, great news. This organization is going to donate the paint. And that was about $700 of our budget. So I wanted to be up front with the radio station owner, and I said to him, look, Lou, we got this other offer, and if you'll give me the whole $2,000, I have my eyes on another project, which was this homeless shelter. I said, but, you know, I wanted to be up front with you and let you know that we are going to get about $700 worth of paint. And he wrote back and said, hey, a deal's a deal, $2,000 it is. And so, you know, we were able to really get a nice running start with that next one, between Home Depot helping us with the paint, and the rest of his money allowed us to purchase what was not donated from Home Depot, and then small groups put to it. So God really provided in some really cool ways.
Boy, I guess so. Yeah, I remember you had shared that story before when we tried to record the show, and I said, we got to get that in there because it was just so amazing, you know.
Right.
And so many things
right.
you've talked about were amazing when you talked about the lady who kind of had some doubts about prayer, and here you call and met that need. So it's mm-hmm. just a very, very cool thing.
When God's in charge, interesting things happen.
Yes, I wanted to also bring up that on our slideshow that we have for the Blog Talk Radio, there's a little picture of a T-shirt, and it says
yeah.
the church is out of the building. Left the building.
The church has left the building. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gone outreaching.
Yeah, gone outreaching with a little gone fishing sign. Yes, that is cute.
Yeah.
Tony, the things you talk about are so amazing, and yet as I'm listening, I'm thinking when you said you were a fairly small church of 400 or 500 people, it just made me want to laugh because my church has a membership of like, goodness, I think at our board meeting the other night we were talking and we're at maybe somewhere between 60 and 80, and that's members. That doesn't mean people that actually come to services and are active participants.
Right.
So I don't even know if you can address this because you are in such a different situation. But I'm going to ask you, do you have any recommendations for a small church like us that has a gradually aging congregation? How we
yeah.
reach out to the community? Because it's funny, my pastor and I were talking about this very thing just yesterday.
Well, yes, actually I can because I'm in what some would consider a mega church right now, which is 1,700 people. I
okay.
came from that church that was 400. I was 17 years in another church of 200. And a little under a year in a church plant of about 40. So I've been all over the map. And it
okay.
was actually in that church plant of 40 where after I had read that, or it came before I read that book, The Externally Focused Church. And this is what whetted my appetite for service that really the book helped to launch into practicality. The this group of 40, they really wanted to make a difference in their community. And so they did some very simple things. They contacted the local high school where some of their kids attended, and they were like, how can we help you? We can, you know, and they decided to beautify the grounds. And so they went to Lowe's or Home Depot and got a couple of flats of flowers and planted them and just gave a pop of color to the school and started to build a relationship with the administration there. I have known organizations that, especially since you're indicating you have an aging population, you might not be able to go out and do the gardening kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many schools where kids need that extra attention. So to develop a reading program, to go into the school library and do a tutoring program and to help them with their homework. So many kids are latchkey kids. You know, they are in an after-school program. They don't have a way to do that. So there are many different creative ways that don't cost any money that will allow you to start to build relationships within your community. And once you do that, once that trust is built, then it will open the doors for other things. I'm with a megachurch right now, but the township comes to us and asks us to put on 3 parties in the park. We now call them summer blasts throughout the summer. And they provide the movie and on, you know, the big screen. And
mm-hmm,
we put
mm-hmm.
up bounce houses and face painting and food. We have popcorn and watermelon and stuff like that. And our praise team goes and sings. And so we have a presence, the name of the church is there and but the township has now come to us and said, how can you, you know, help us to serve our community? So it's possible.
Very good. Very good. Well, our youth group is very active. We do have a group of young people, high school kids, who they go on mission trip every year. And I mean, they have a reputation for being just the hardest workers in the group. Mm. They are really well loved by, well received by the places where they have gone on mission trip. And we have talked about the possibility of them maybe starting to do some things for older folks in the community. Well, like me, for example, I have a bunch of old furniture in the house that I need to get rid of. And mm-hmm. I just can't do it myself. And my pastor said, you know, we'd be glad to come over and take care of that for you. So, yeah, we're talking about ideas on our own as well. But I was looking forward to getting some input from you, because I know you've been doing this for a very long time.
Well, yeah, I have two other quick thoughts. One of them,
okay.
at Central, they used to have a group of guys. So part of the men's ministry called themselves the Lawn Rangers. And the LAWN Rangers. And so they would go to those that were older in the community and cut their lawns.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was that with this church plant, I don't know if you have a homeless shelter in your particular community, but, you know, there's so many of them. And where we were, the Salvation Army actually had like a day center where people could go to get respite from the cold or the heat. There was a television, there was a gaming table, you know, table so they could play cards and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not gaming tables. How I word that. And they would serve a meal midday. But there was absolutely no place in the city, and it blows my mind, on a weekend where people could get a meal. And so they really wanted churches to come in and serve a meal. And so this little church plant, we didn't have a whole lot of money, or we did soup. But we called it Soup and Smiles, and we got just people that we knew to donate. Some of them were used blankets and hats and gloves and scarves, and we made some pots of soup. And just went there
mm-hmm.
and served that. So, again, just got to get a little creative, but certainly
mm-hmm.
ways to serve.
Exactly. Well, Tony, at this point, I'd like to take a little break and make listeners aware of who they're listening to, because we have some folks that come into the show after it has started. So I like to identify mm-hmm. who we are. The name of the show is Step Into the Light, and I am your host, Patty Sheen. My guest today is Tony Campbell, and Tony has done a great deal of with churches. Her belief is that we need to get out from behind the four walls of a church building and out into the community to meet spiritual and physical needs of people. In this manner, we are able to share the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is the main focus. Tony can be found on she has a blog. It's Lakeside Lessons. It's a very delightful blog. I enjoy reading some of the stories on there. She's also on Facebook and on Twitter and on Pinterest. But I'm not going to read off a bunch of URLs to you listeners, because you won't remember them. Instead, I'm going to refer you to my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene, all one word, .com. On that website, you will find a link to this show, and you will also find where it says more information, you will find all of those links to Tony. So it makes it pretty easy compared to the way my website used to be. It has been upgraded over the past few weeks and makes it a lot easier for visitors to find what they want, and it makes it a lot easier for me as well. So I'm grateful to my SKWD guys, Bruce and Jonathan, if you happen to be listening. Also, I want to make listeners aware that archive shows are available. This show will be on archive. It will be available as long as Blog Talk Radio exists. And you can access it at any time if you want to listen to the show again, if you missed part of it, or you want to refer it to a friend or whatever. You'll also find on the website, there's the first three shows on there, but then below that, there's a little tab that says more shows, and it will take you to all of the shows that we have recorded to date on Step Into the Light. So would love to get some input from folks. If you do listen to the show, I'd love to have you email me at patty.sheen, patti.sheen at gmail.com. Let me know what you think of the show. I'd love to know. So thank you for listening, and we will continue with our interview with Tony at this point. Tony, the premise of Step Into the Light, of course, is for folks to share, like you have, ways that their ministry can bring light into the lives of others, and you certainly do that with your work. But I also would like to know, is there a dark time that you experienced in your life that was just really tough for you? Maybe it had something to do with your outreach work, or maybe it had something to do with a more personal issue that you would like to share. And how, through that dark time, did you find your way back to light?
Yes, I'm sure all of us have gone through a dark time at least once in our lives. And for me, I went through a divorce a number of years ago, and I was actually separated for 4 years, and it was kind of in the middle of that separation, and I was just feeling overwhelmed. It had just been one of those days where I felt like I was attacked from all sides. You know, I didn't have sufficient funds. Radio is fun, but it's not. You're never going to get rich from it. You do it because you love it, kind of like outreach. Mm-hmm.
And, yes.
So, you know, my kids, I was concerned about where my kids were going, and it was just an overwhelming time. And this one particular day that I can think about, I was coming out of the food store. I had spent the last couple of bucks I had, and on the way home, I just started to sob. I mean, it was just that body racking, can't even grab a breath kind of cry.
You know, total despair.
Right. Exactly. Total despair. And I wasn't sure I could make it home. I was afraid I was going to drive off the road because I couldn't see. I was crying so hard.
Mm-hmm.
When I finally got there, I was annoyed. I lived on a one-way street, and parking was on the street, and of course somebody was in front of my house. And so I parked one house down, and it was a full moon. I can remember looking at that moon and thinking, God, you are like the moon. You are immense, and you are beautiful, and you feel a million miles away. I just don't feel like I can reach you. And I just started crying. And some of what I said to him was, like, I feel like the whole world is against me. And I feel so alone. I can't function anymore. I can't do this on my own. And, you know, I don't have any money. How am I going to care for my kids? You know, help me, God. And I probably sat in the car for half an hour. I mean, the neighbor starts to, like, look out of his window. Like, what is she doing in the car? I thought, I got to pull myself together. And at this point, I operate a lot late at night. This was about 11 o'clock. The light on my street had gone out. So even though there was a full moon, it was kind of dark. And I start pulling the groceries out, and my neighbor who lived across the street, her name was Maria, and she pulls up and she says, "Hi, Tony, how are you?" And, you know, I try to put on that brave face. I'm like, "Oh, I'm great, how are you?"
"Oh, I'm fine."
"I'm fine." Like, I knew she couldn't see that I'd been crying because it was dark. Exactly. And she said, "My sister says the Holy Spirit is telling her that you need prayer." And I was like, whoa. Like, first of all, I didn't see anybody else in the car. And why is the Holy Spirit, you know, like, hanging me out here? Like, so she said, "Are you sure you don't need prayer?" And I said, "Yeah, I think God sent you here to pray for me." And honestly, you know, I knew Maria was a Christian. Our kids had gone to a Christian school together. But our interaction was probably like, "Hey, how's it going this morning?" You know, I don't know that she had any idea that I was separated, no idea what was going on. And so she said, well, let me park the car. And her sister got out and walked over to me, and she parked and came over, and she said she's a missionary to Italy, and they were from Costa Rica. And she said she doesn't speak any English, but she wants you to sit down on your porch. I was much taller than both of these ladies, and I'm 5'8", and they probably came to my shoulder. And they're like, sit down. So I sat down, and she put her hand on my head, and she started to pray in Spanish. And Maria stood on the other side, and she started to translate. And the first thing out of this woman's mouth was, God says you're not alone. He's here with you. And I just started crying all over again. I was like, how did she know to say that? You know, I just told him I felt so alone. And then she put her hand on my shoulder, and she said, don't say that you can't do it. You can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. And again, it was like, this is a little crazy now, because nobody heard me in my car, and these are the exact things that I said. And then finally she put her hand over my heart, and she said, you've been bearing a large hurt for a long time, and Jesus says you're released from that. And, you know, I mean, I had really struggled in the separation. I knew God hates divorce, and there was a lot of circumstances going on, and I really struggled with a lot of guilt over the separation, and it wasn't my fault. But, you know, just having her say that Jesus sees, and he sees how long you've been dealing with this, and you are released from that burden.
Wow.
And I just, you know, just everything fell away. I mean, just the peace that washed over me was incredible. And I never saw that lady again. Close to one time. Obviously, I saw my neighbor,
really?
And you know, yeah. But I, and it was right before I moved, and I bumped into Maria again, and she said, "You know, I was talking to my sister," and she said, "How is that neighbor that I prayed for?" And I said, "You know, I tell that story over and over and over again, because that is like an altar in my life. When I feel disconnected from God, when I feel like maybe He's not listening." I remember, and that story is actually on my my blog. It's called The Checklist, because I said it was like God gave her a checklist. She went right down that list, and everything that I had cried out to Him, He addressed. And so
He addressed in that prayer. Wow.
I knew He
that
heard me.
That is powerful, Tony.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not the only time. You know, God doesn't speak to me all the time, but that was a situation, and then 3 years later, I had to move, and I try to make this one real brief, but it's another cool story, because now the divorce has happened. I had gone through this big battle over the house and court. I lost. I literally had lived in this house for 28 years and was walking out with, like, nothing, not even enough money to put down in an apartment. And God kind of worked all that out. The apartment I found was $300 more than my mortgage. I didn't know how I was going to afford it. And as soon as I gave my car insurance people my new address, my car insurance dropped $200 a month. And then my son got his own insurance, and that was $100. So God made that away. But before I moved in, while I was still uncertain, because I'm like, how am I going to handle this gap? I was driving down the road where I was going to get the apartment. It's half of a top half of a house, and I was with my niece, and I saw out of the corner of my eye this huge big blue sign. I had never seen it before, and you know, I always joke, God, I need a sign. You gotta, I'm stupid.
Yeah.
You gotta really speak to me. You gotta spell it
I
out.
Say that
real nice if it was. It'd be nice if it was a neon with a big arrow, you know.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
I threw on my blinker, and as soon as I got in front of this sign, I said to her, "Take a picture of that. Take a picture of that." And it said, it was, first of all, it was a neon blue. And it said, "Dear friends of Chesterfield," but I knew it was for me. It said, "God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. He heals the broken in heart and bindeth up their wounds." And it quoted, of course, Psalm 46:1 and 147:3. And I knew, I knew when I saw that sign, yes, go ahead, make the move. He's going to take care of you. And that one's also on my blog. That one's called God Writes in Neon Colors. So,
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's been some
pretty amazing
stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing those stories, Tony.
Oh, you're welcome.
I wanted to get back a little bit into some of the things that you do with your ministry. The Christmas store, I remember reading about it. I just remember that it was a real creative and innovative idea, and I don't remember the details. Would you tell us a little bit about that? It's different from you know, you hear about the National Collection Project like Angel Tree and Toys for Tots, which are wonderful, but and I'm sorry, I don't even, it's been so long since, you know, I researched for the show because of all the problems we've had. But I just remember the Christmas store must have really impressed me because I have a note to ask you about it. So,
Got it. Well, we actually stole that idea, I will confess. but we tweaked it and we made it our own. What had happened was, you remember I said I read the book, The Externally Focused Church.
Yes.
I've written a blog post about that, and it just so happens, you know, air quotes, just so happens, it was a God incident, that the gentleman who worked with those authors read that post and said to me, this is so cool. We're putting together the 2011 most externally focused ideas, and we would love to interview you about your Meals and More, which is something we did with the Salvation Army. And I said, I would love to talk to you about that, but right now we're doing Adopt-A-Room, which was that homeless shelter. I said, and I think you're going to find that even more fascinating. So I sat down and talked to him for about an hour, and he agreed. And they put the Adopt-A-Room program into that resource, which can still be found online. It's in a PDF form. And I began reading some of the other 26 ideas that were there to see what we could take on. And the Christmas store jumped out at me. It was from a church in the Midwest. They actually did it to raise funds for the local school library. But what we did, the difference between the Christmas store and Angel Tree or Toys for Tots, they give away gifts. In some cases, a family is adopted and you purchase the gifts for the family. But everything that I do, I try to do to empower our clients and those that we serve, and to give them some added dignity and more of a hand up than a handout. And so we charge a very small amount of money. We charge 10% of the value of the toy. So what we ask congregants to do is to go out and purchase a toy. We have little stockings that they'll take, so they will know that they're buying for a boy who's between the ages of 6 and 8, and they're to spend $20. We have three price points, 10, 20, and 30. And so the people will come in, and they will spend $1, $2, or $3. It's just enough that most people can swing that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but they can honestly say to their child, I shopped for it, I paid for it, and they can own that. It's not an already wrapped gift that they're, you know, is a surprise to the parent as much as it is to the child.
Yeah.
And so, and we offer free child care during that. We offer free gift wrap. And it's been adopted by other churches in varying forms. There's a church in New York that does this now. We do it generally about 10 days before Christmas. They have decided to make that a Black Friday option for people who can't go out and take care of the Black Friday sale, take advantage of the Black Friday sales.
Yes.
And so I know they collect from local stores and do that. Toys for Tots has a really big presence in our area, and a lot of organizations collect for them. So we primarily rely on the congregants to purchase those gifts. But where I am now, we take any money that we raise and we put it into our food pantry. So the people who are coming have been identified as in need through the food pantry. So they're really just helping themselves. And when I was at Central and we started it, we took that money and we donated it to an organization. So we gave it to the Salvation Army one year. I believe we may have given it to that homeless shelter another year. So we never, we didn't hold on to it. Now you can, if you wanted to do that, and just use that as a base of funds to purchase some of the gifts the following year, which would allow you to expand. The other thing my initial Christmas store did was we enlisted the help of photographers who donated their time and their talent, and we took family portraits because
because
that was something that would be enduring and something that can get quite expensive, and you know, everybody does the selfie thing, but to have a professionally taken picture of the family, and we would print it out right there and put it in a 5x7 frame, and so they could leave the store with that gift from us.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That sounds wonderful, Tony. Another subject I would like to touch on, we're getting close to the end of our time here. How do we help our church members realize that it's not just the poor or downtrodden folks in our community who need outreach, but everyone in the community? You may have people, we may have people, we in general may have people in our community that are, I don't want to say affluent, but they really don't have anything in the way of physical needs for food and clothing and things like that. But maybe their spiritual life is lacking. How do we make our church members realize that those people need us just as much as those who are lacking for the basic amenities of life?
Right. And just as much.
Did I word that correctly?
Yes. And I would say just as much, if not more, because oftentimes when you're in need and you can't be self-reliant, you're more willing to rely on God.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
And it's easier as a group to say, here is a material need we can meet. It takes a little less for us to be able to put together a meal or a hygiene kit or buy a Christmas gift than to sit down and have a discussion with somebody about their need for Christ.
Yes.
You know, some people don't feel like they have that gift of evangelism, but, you know, I think about in respect to your question, I think about the story of the rich young ruler. And, you know, he kept all the laws and said, I've done all of this, so what else do I need to do? And Jesus said to him, you know, sell it all and come with me.
Yeah.
And he left sad because he didn't want to get rid of his possessions. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I would really speak to the congregation through that story and say, you know, that man had as great a need as the leper or the lame or the deaf. It just wasn't visible. And
exactly.
We absolutely have to speak to the heart and not just to the body. And so that can be much more challenging when looking for things to do. And I think oftentimes when we're looking for an outreach to do in a more affluent community, it is more about, we connect, I should say, through a community event, through doing something for things they care about, their schools, their library, that type of thing, so that we have that presence and they get to know who we are as we join mm-hmm. forces, perhaps over something that's a mutual ground, and then it gives us opportunity to talk to them about Christ, because I think a lot of people come in with preconceived notions as to what a Christian is, does, look like, you know, all of that. And I would also say that inviting those from a more affluent background to help you in reaching out to the community with more needs gives you a dual opportunity. It allows you to work side by side with them and then talk about, you know, gives you some credence to talk about your faith. And all of a sudden you're not that strange Christian. You're that guy that I worked with last Saturday cleaning the park, you know?
Yeah.
So I know you're cool. You know, I can talk to you.
Exactly.
And it also allows them to part with some of those funds and use that, you know, maybe let their heart lead a little bit. And so, you know, and God can use that. It's that radio station owner that I mentioned, he certainly didn't need any money from me.
Right.
He had a good heart. You know, there's a lot of people out there with a good heart, people who want to do good. But we know that good people don't get into heaven. Saved people get into heaven. At the end, he actually wound up selling the radio station. And he had helped me over a period of 3 or 4 years to the tune of about $12,000 with my outreaches.
Wow.
And, yeah, he called me into the office before he was leaving. Because he wanted, he actually gifted me with something personally. Because he said, there are people who do things just because, you know, they don't look for any reward, and you're one of those people. And so I was humbled by that gift. But at that time, I said to him, Lou, do you know the story of Esther? And he said, no. And I said, well, I'm not going to put myself on the same level. Because she saved an entire nation of her people from death. I said, but there is a quote in the book of Esther. So I talked to him about how she came to be queen and, you know, and how Mordecai went to her and said, perhaps you were chosen for such a time as this. And I said, see, the part of the story I didn't tell you was in the middle of all that, the radio station had sold off some places, and my department was taken from 4 down to 1. And I was supposed to be one of the ones who went. And 3 days after my boss gave me the heads up that I was going to be let go because he wanted to prepare me, they decided to let him go and keep me. And
oh, my goodness.
And I told you I had a relationship with a corporate attorney. She said, your name was on my desk. Like, your paperwork was on my desk. I don't know what happened.
Goodness.
But God happened. And I said to him, Lou, I truly believe that my job was spared for such a time as this. That the relationship that you and I have been able to build and the help that we have been able to give is because God wanted to use you in this. And so it gave me an opportunity to plant that seed. So, you know, that's why we need to reach people of all backgrounds and sorts. Yeah.
And, you know, throughout your conversation just now, Tony, when you talked about how you get to know people as the guy that I cleaned the park with on Saturday, I think that holds up the premise that you strongly believe that service is not something we do, it is who we are as Christians.
Amen. Part of our DNA.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, Tony, our time is getting short. I know you have things going on today, but there's one more thing I definitely want to touch on before we say goodbye, and that is tell us about your book in progress.
Ah. Well, the working title is Jesus Has Left the Building, The Nitty-Gritty of Creative Church Outreach. And
wonderful.
And as you mentioned, it is a step-by-step guide, but I've tried very hard not to make this a dry, manual. This is a lot of the stories that I've shared with you today are woven into it. So each chapter is about how the outreach came to fruition, how the idea came together. And the really important thing is at the end of every chapter, I cover the nitty-gritty. And so I answer the questions for each one of these outreaches. How many volunteers will this take? What's the time frame for setting it up and carrying it out? What am I going to need to put it all together? And so it's the timeline, the items needed, the volunteers needed, as well as alternate ways to, alternate resources to tap into. So every major corporation has a community page, and they have grants that are available. I mean, again, speaking to the small church dilemma,
yes.
There are grants that are available. There are different ways that they give. Home Depot, you know, has like a $25 coupon that you can get, like just walking in the store and showing, you know, your information and giving them an idea. And then they also will give more. But Wawa and Lowe's and just so many different organizations that do that. And so I tell you some of those places and where to, what the URLs are and how to tap that. So I've tried to make it practical and interesting. It's kind of the story of the 4 years that I was setting up all of these, because I did not have a go-to manual that explained all of those important things that I needed to know. I wanted to be a good steward of my money and my time,
mm-hmm,
and hopefully mm-hmm. this will give those who are interested in doing that that leg up that I did not have. You know,
yes.
And you can choose from small to large and ways to, you know, scale it down or make it bigger to fit your needs.
So you've laid the groundwork then for other folks, it sounds like.
That's my goal, yep. Because
wonderful.
I want to see every
wonderful
church doing this in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, in this small community, and it kind of sounds, I suppose, like I'm making excuses, but, like, you know, you talk about Home Depot and Lowe's and these places. Our closest one of those is 80 miles away.
Wow.
We don't have those. For crying out loud, Tony, our closest Walmart is 25 miles away. I mean, just to give you an idea. And I'm sure there are other communities throughout the country that are in that same situation, you
right.
know. So we
right.
are not familiar with, well, maybe other people in town are. I'm certainly not familiar with these options that you talk about. So this is something that we can explore. Just because it's 80 miles away doesn't mean we do business there.
Right.
You know,
right.
we go out of town and we do business things. So we have dealings with these businesses, but I think when you don't see people on a daily basis, you just don't think about, oh, hey, maybe I should talk to so-and-so that works at this place, you know? So, yeah, that's a great idea. Well, Tony, I have thoroughly enjoyed having you on the show today. I love listening to your amazing stories about how God has worked in your life and the lives of others. And you have certainly taken the initiative to do some wonderful things. Is there any particular thought that you would like to leave us with before we say goodbye that I didn't cover? And you're thinking, I wish she had asked me about that.
you know, I could talk about outreach forever. I met somebody at the conference, and as I was going on, he's like, you're feisty. You know, that's really, I've been called many things, but never feisty.
It's fun to meet people that are on fire with their passion for whatever they do, Tony, and you definitely are.
Yes, and honestly, I have never met anybody who says, I'm sorry I got involved in doing that outreach.
Mm-hmm.
People grow from it. People are blessed by it, and that's what they don't expect. They go into it thinking that they're going to bless these other people, and they come out with experiences and stories and blessings that they never counted on. And
yeah.
So that's what's so cool, is it's really a two-way street. God does amazing things in lives on both sides. So that's my only other thought. If you've not tried it, you know, you don't, you can do something and dip your toe in the water, and I guarantee you it'll make you thirsty and you'll want to go back for more.
Definitely. Well, Tony, again, I want to thank you ever so much for spending the time with us this morning. I know that you have plans for today and travels in your future, and I'll be praying for you for your safe travels and that all goes well for you over the weekend. So may God continue to bless you, and thank you ever so much.
Amen. And thank you so much for the opportunity to get the word out. I appreciate that.
You bet. Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. I invite you to please join us next week when we have another show. And I also urge you to go check out Tony's website and her blog, her Facebook page, and any other social media that she has. And please come visit Patty Sheen and refer other folks to this show and some of the other shows that we have. God bless you, and thank you for listening.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites.